80, got 80. Anything lower? 40? 40 what? You're killing me. You really think 40's old? I turned 47 last Saturday. I like his answer, but I won't like it in a year from now. Anyway, old is a relative thing. It's a perspective type thing. When you're 18, 30 seems old. When you are 30, 50 seems kind of old. When you hit 47, 60, 65 is kind of old. It involves your perspective. When you see an older person, the thing I think about right now when I see an older person, I think about, and we had a gentleman here that just passed away a week ago, roughly. And I think at one time in his life, he was just as vibrant as any of you. He had interests similar to yours. He was probably interested in things that guys of this age were interested in, cars and girls and games and sports and things like that, just as you are. And that's okay. That's a good time of life. It really is. It's a great time of life. But it won't last forever. And a lot of the things you do now will have an impact on how things go later. And so consider that in the decisions that you make. I know you've already heard some of that, and I won't rehearse a lot of that. But it's really true. Let me ask you one more question. Since we got you all here, and I'm just going to want to know. I know, I won't ask this question, but looking back, I mean, I'm not too old to remember in events like this, gospel meetings. One of the reasons I went to these kind of things was to meet members of the opposite sex. And I'm sure that is probably the case to some of you. And that's really a good thing in a way because, you know, I would choose to try to be with those who are spiritually minded. And I would think most of you here are not here by force. You're here because you want to be. And what better place to mingle with others like that? So I think that's a good thing, too. But I know that's part of it. We didn't have name tags back then. So we had to figure all that stuff out for ourselves, the who's who and all that. But anyway, let's turn over to 1 Timothy 5. Now, see, I thought I'd get a laugh out of you when I brought that up about meeting others, but nobody said anything. Everybody just sat here like this. Like, I'm not guilty of that. Anyway, so I was kind of trying to loosen you up with that. That went over like a lead balloon. All right. 1 Timothy 5. We're going to sort of set the stage. Of course, who is Timothy written to? Timothy. Well, that was a hard one. What is Timothy? I heard everybody and I heard nothing. A young man, right? A young man. Here we go. We're going to set the stage for what we're going to talk about. Concern for those older than us. You know, that topic, when it was first assigned to me, when one of our elders came to us, to me, and Wayne was the one that came to me, I thought, boy, I don't know what I'm going to do with that one. I know there's some passages, but I was actually, I kind of reeled back at first. I thought, well, I don't know how I'm going to address this, because I don't think it has a lot to say about that. Well, as I dug a little bit more and more, I found a lot of passages that deal with that. And there's a lot of responsibilities that you and I have with respect to treating older people and how we deal with older people. There are certain responsibilities that you will have later on in life with respect to older people. So it is a very vital topic. My wife, I asked her, I said, how did I get stuck with this one? She said, because you're old. I said, thank you, dear. You're the same age as I am. All right, 1 Timothy 5. Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters in all purity. Honor widows who are widows indeed. So that sets the stage mostly for what we want to talk about. We're going to focus in on the older individuals, but you are younger people who will have responsibilities in that regard. We're going to talk about several things today. We're going to talk about, for one, some of the Bible statements and principles that we can learn concerning what is our responsibility towards the elderly. Another thing I want to do, I want you to look at some Bible characters who were fairly old when they did the great things that they did. You might be surprised. I remember one in particular just jumped out at me one day. I thought, I didn't know he was that old when he did all that. So we'll talk about him in a minute. And again, what are my responsibilities towards the elderly? And then what can you do now at your point in life? What kind of things can you do to benefit an older person? All right. What does the Bible say? Turn over to the book of Proverbs. We're going to read a couple of passages there. You might want to find chapter 16, maybe put your thumb there and have it ready to flip to chapter 20. Paul Sciotta, read Proverbs 16:31. The silver haired head, mine says the gray head, is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. John Sciotta, read verse 20. Sciotta duo here. Chapter 20, verse 29, I'm sorry. So we see some emphasis placed on gray-headedness as being a good thing. Do a lot of people treat it that way? No, they start getting my age, if you've still got it. A lot of people, particularly ladies, will get rid of that because they don't want to look any older because gray hair makes you think people think you're old. The Bible associates that with experience. It doesn't just say gray-headedness. It's not saying go out and color your hair gray. But what it's noting is the glory that's associated with reaching that point in life that you've gained that much experience through living life, through having all these different experiences, ups and downs, disappointments, enjoyments. When you experience a lot of those things, it makes you a well-rounded, wise individual. You're able to tackle things later on in life. You're able to advise others later on in life that you might not necessarily have earlier on. You, each of you, you're experiencing different things right now. Some good, some bad. You know, don't let the bad ones take you down too low because there's a lot of ups to come too. I know sometimes some of the bad ones just seem extremely bad right now. I remember that. I remember having disappointments. There's still a lot to look forward to too. Still a lot of good things to happen too. So don't get too far down. Always keep your eyes on the focus of what's really important in life, and that'll help you through it. So gray hair is associated with glory. What does it say about young men here? What's the glory of young men? Their strength. What? Focusing on lifting weights? Is that mostly what you see young men doing? A lot of them, you don't see older guys doing a lot of that. I travel some with my job, and occasionally I'll have to fly some, and I'll flip through these magazines that are on the on the seat in front of you. And nearly every one I fly, there's this ad for this guy who looks like he's about 65 or 70, gray-headed, but he's invented some machine that has just turned him into a muscle man. And it kind of looks ridiculous. It even shows him with his shirt off, and I'm not condoning that at all, because I don't think that's modest dress for a man. But it even shows him that way, all muscled up. And the idea is, for people, readers like me, wow, I could look like that if I bought his machine. Don't think I'd ever look like that. Anyway, but typically we don't see that associated with older guys, do we? We don't focus in on those kind of things. Gray hair associated with a crown of glory. Leviticus, the 19th chapter, verse 32. This is going to depict the Old Testament's attitude, the Old Testament law had something to say about how older people were to be treated. Jeffrey Knutson, how about reading that? So the attitude here is you will rise up before the gray-headed. I believe, and I read a few commentaries that actually suggest that in the presence of an older person, they were to rise, they were to stand up. That was a way of showing respect to the older person. Even if it was only figurative, that would be indicative of a person showing respect. I think it probably was literal. You shall rise up. You shall revere your God. That verse is included in this same context. Perhaps what it is suggesting is showing honor and respect to an older person was in a sense showing reverence to God. So, and again, the honor of old men is, and you shall revere the before the gray-headed. I am the Lord, it says. Turn over to Job, the 12th chapter. Somebody briefly summarize in less than a minute and a half the book of Job. Who's brave enough to do that? Book of Job. God tested Job and he won. Okay, that's less than a minute and a half. Anybody else? And that's good. Somebody had their hand up. Good summary. Very good summary. The only thing I would add to that, and the reason I want you to see that, because in a few minutes we'll go back to that book, and there's a principle there that I want you to see. There were some friends that came and advised him. And, you know, basically Job is a book, again, as you said, and as Catherine said, Job is tested for things he didn't even realize. I don't think he even realized all that was going on in his life and all that was going on behind the scenes in heaven. But he was tested. He remained faithful to God. He did not ever, he doubted and he said some foolish things. He did. And some others came to him and said some foolish things. But he still never quit on God. He still really believed that God was righteous and that he had been righteous. Even though some others were advising him, you must have done something to deserve that. I think that's one of the principles that you'll see in the book of Job. And he never deterred from that. Even though he had those that were closest to him trying to tell him he deserved it, his wife telling him, curse God and die. He didn't do that. He remained faithful to God. Keep that in mind. Now let's read this verse. The same principle we're going to see here in Job, the 12th chapter. Anybody wants to read it, go ahead and read it. Read it, Andrew. You looked at me. Verse 12. Oh, it's not up there, is it? Sorry. There we go. Now you got it. Nobody, no wonder nobody jumped up and read it, did they? Verse 12. Seeing that same principle, with long life, with age comes wisdom, comes experience, understanding. And let's keep going. Deuteronomy, the 32nd chapter. Go ahead. What is the context of Deuteronomy, the 32nd chapter? Who's speaking? Moses. What do we call that little section right there? The Song of Moses. Remember there's a song, Sing the Song of Moses? You ever hear that? In one of those... Can't remember what song it is now. But that's what that reference is to. And in this context, he is saying, he's speaking some things about God, what God has done. And he's saying, remember the days of old... consider the years of old generations. Ask your father, he'll inform you. Your elders, they will tell you. They had seen that. They had experienced that. Now let's go back to the book of Job, chapter 32. There's another principle I want you to see here. And I kind of threw this one in. It's not really fitting in terms of characteristics of old people, but there's a principle of respect here that I want you to see that I think is important. Job, the 32nd chapter. Anybody who's not from East Side that wants to read, I don't know everybody's names. I'm just going to look out there, and if somebody looks at me, I'm going to pick them. Everybody's looking down. How about on the end? You just looked at me and smiled. Huh? It's okay. Job 32, verse 4 through 7. Let me set the stage here. Remember, we just talked about those friends, those three friends that came to him and told him, if I understand the book of Job right, they sort of said, "Well, Job, you did something to deserve this." There's several discourses back and forth. One would speak, and then another would, and Job would respond. Another one would speak, another one would respond. And if I understand it properly, and I'm sure there's more said, but one of the things they're telling him is, God didn't do these kind of things to people unless they deserve them. I believe that's one principle. They keep going to him, and he's like, I've had my integrity. I'm being faithful. God doesn't do that necessarily. So this young man named Elihu now comes onto the scene. He's very brief mentioned here in that book, but there's some principles here I want you to see. So begin reading with verse 4 and continue with verse 7. Okay, so he's waiting his turn to speak to Job. Why is he waiting? Because they're older than he. They were years older than he. My version says, I use the New American Standard. What kind of feelings was he feeling? What principal feeling did he have? Anger. He was upset. He didn't like what they had been saying. Some suggest that he had been present the whole time the others were speaking. I don't know if you can prove that, but he may have been. He was obviously there long enough to hear a lot of what was said. And he sees that there's no answer in the mouth of these men. He's angry. And he starts speaking. And he says, "I'm young in years. You're old. I was afraid to say anything. I thought age should speak, and increased years should teach wisdom." The principle that I want to show you there is that even though these men deserve some degree of rebuke for the things they had said, he still acted out of respect toward them. You see that? I think that'll tie in with the principle that we saw earlier on. Don't sharply rebuke an older man. Now, some versions say elder. I believe the context means in that passage, in this passage that we'll talk about this morning, I believe it's talking about an older man in general. Let's keep going. What'd I do? There we go. I hit the blank out screen. Let's think about some of the things the elderly are experiencing. And what I want you to see here now is I want you to develop a sympathy and an understanding for people who have reached this point in life. And I think it will help you in terms of your attitude towards them and the things you might want to do towards them. Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, verse 1. And this is a little bit longer reading. Who hasn't read yet that would like to read? Go ahead. Verses 1 through 8. There is a mental picture that's being painted here of a time of life when things aren't going as well. You're older. And I don't suggest to you that I can tell you what every one of these stand for. There's a lot of debate. You go to commentaries, you'll see, you can see some will give you a depiction of the various organs that are depicted here, the eyes, the ears, the mouth. I'm not going to go that far with it because I'm not sure about it. But I can get the idea of what's being suggested here. Think about it. What do you think of a dreary day? The sun and the light, it's cloudy, it's dark. It gets towards the end of the day. It's kind of a dark, uncertain time of day. Watchmen of the house tremble. Mighty men stoop. Because, again, things, their bodies aren't working as well. The grinding one, some even suggest that's your teeth. I don't know about that. I tend to think it's people who are working. But they stand idle because they are few. Those who look through the windows grow dim. The doors on the street are shut. Again, some people would suggest these actually represent various parts of the body not working as well. I think, again, the image that you should get here is of a dark, more difficult time, a more uncertain time of life. One will arise at the sound of a bird. Bird makes a noise outside. You're afraid. You want to know what that sound was. The daughters of song will sing softly. Men are afraid of high places. Terrors on the road. Again, there's a mental image being painted here of a time when things aren't as good physically. And that's what older people are experiencing. You know, they have lived their lives. They've raised their children. Some of them are alone. And some of them do live with fear and uncertainty because of the uncertain times that lie ahead. They know death is coming, but they don't know anything about what it's like past that. If you live long enough, if God lets time go on, and God allows your lives, and many of you, if God lets time go on, probably, speaking of odds, the odds are many of you will see this point in life. And you'll have times in which your bodies will not work as well. That, I know that seems a long way off now. And it really is in a sense. But it's coming. And you will experience those things. You will experience them. And even at my age, and I've got a almost 99-year-old grandfather who's still alive that I have a lot of contact with. But he is experiencing these things now. He sits alone a lot of times because people have their eyes. He chooses to live alone. He's had opportunity to go and live with family, but at this point, he's still able to live alone, and he likes that. He's checked on a lot. But he does sit there a long time in the day without anybody to talk to. And there is an uncertainty at life at this point. You will experience that one day, Lord willing, if you're allowed to live that long. Let's keep going. Develop an appreciation of where they are in this life. That's the point I'm trying to get across. Now, let's look at some characters real briefly, and I'm not going to have you read every one of these, but I want you to notice some of the great things that some of these people do. Some of them we don't really even meet that well until they're a little much older in life. Abraham, God appeared to Abraham, told him to leave, leave Haran and move at 75 years old. He was 100 years old when he fathered Isaac, and I recognize there was a miraculous element involved in that. God allowed that to happen out of the natural course of events, away from the natural course of events. He was 175 years old when he died, again, recognizing that God would have allowed him to live longer during that time. But recognize, 75 years old, when God first appeared to him, and all those things we read about are post that time, for the most part. This is the one I thought about here. You know, I don't know how old I was when I recognized that Moses was 80 years old when he first went to Pharaoh. Did you realize that? We meet him, well, of course, we meet him when he's born, and of course his mother puts him in the basket in the little ark, and Pharaoh's daughter finds him, and he's educated in the ways of the Egyptians. He's also brought up, nursed by his mother, so he learns about who he is. And the book of Acts tells us, I believe it's the book of Acts, tells us that when he was 40 years old, he figured that God was going to use him to deliver the Israelites at 40. Did that work out real well? No, not then it didn't. 40 years later, after he had lived in the land of Midian, after he had to flee there, going and living in the land of Midian for 40 years, then God appeared to him at the burning bush. So really, all those great events. You remember this man who wasn't real sure of himself, didn't want to have God send him, didn't want to go to the people, had all these excuses at age 80, lived 40 more years, and led the people through the wandering in the wilderness from 80 on up to 120. Joshua and Caleb are both characters, based on evidence that we can read in certain passages that we can read in the Bible. Well, I'm just going to tell you about Joshua. The Bible suggests that he was older when he participated in the invasion and conquest, somewhere around the age of 80. The same principle is true of Caleb. He received his inheritance at age 85, and he had participated in the invasion and conquest as well. Here's one you might not realize. How old do you think Daniel was when he was thrown in the lion's den, without looking at that? Young guy? No? Most of you know better. Based on historical evidence of the kings that ruled at the time, he was probably in his 80s. I'm not sure I've always realized that. Some of you are smarter than that. So, the principle that I want you to see is that God has used older people. He continues to use older people in service to Him. They can do great things for Him and us today. They're worthy of our attention and respect. They have experience and wisdom about things that can be very great for us. And they are also at a point in life where they need us. They need us. And you can play a great role in making an older person's life better. Particularly those of you who are young. Particularly you. Let's keep going. So what are my responsibilities? I've kind of already hit on this. We are prohibited from a sharp rebuke of an older man. Does that mean we can't go to him if he's in error? I don't think it means that. In fact, let's look at Galatians, the 6th chapter. And I'll just read this one. Brethren, if anyone is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. We have a responsibility to correct those who are in error, don't we? But we have to do it the right way. It has to be done in a spirit of gentleness. And it cannot be done sharply for an older man. I do think there are some other examples in the Bible where a sharp rebuke was used. Jesus sharply rebuked the Pharisees. They deserved that. Paul withstood Peter to the face. Sharp rebuke, it seems like. But again, there are some responsibilities we have. We have to do things with the right kind of respect and honor of them, and recognizing their position in life. Exhort an older man as a father, the Bible says in chapter 5. I'm back in 1 Timothy now, 1 Timothy 5. So again, this requires the proper respect and sensitivity of the person's age. Older women are to be treated as mothers. And I think a lot of us do this. A lot of us do that. I think a lot of you, I know a lot of you, and there are certain women that you look at and you almost look at them as mothers because of your close association with them. And that's the way we are to be treating them. You know, we're living in a day and age now where respect for anybody is kind of going out the door. It's amazing, and it's worse in some places than it is in others. Just the way people treat each other on the road, the way they treat each other on the internet, going back and forth. And I know sometimes some of that's good-natured. But some people can be quite cruel. The cloak of anonymity that people have in posting comments kind of brings people out of their shell to such an extent that they're really mean. We have responsibility in the way that we treat others. Now let's talk about this aspect, and I want you to really look now in 1 Timothy 5 if you haven't been looking that close. There is a section here that deals with taking care of widows. And if you'll look through the entire list, group of passages here, I believe you'll see, and I believe that you'll learn that this implies a church's responsibility in terms of taking care of widows. Let's look at this right quick. Honor widows who are widows what? What do your versions say? Indeed. What's another version say? Truly widows? Okay. There is a list of qualifications that are given here with respect to the care of widows. And again, if you look at the entire passage, it says here, but if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must what? Take care of them? If any has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. Who has pretty much had the responsibility for taking care of you? Your parents, right? Who took you to the doctor when you were little and sick? Your parents. Who went and got your medicine? Your parents. Who measured out your medicine and handed it to you with the water to drink? With you yelling and crying, I don't want to take this. Wait till you experience that as parents. You're going to have some, you got some fun coming. When you know they need to take it and they won't take it because they don't like the taste of it or they don't like the looks of it. That's a lot of fun. Anyway, usually you force it down of them, and usually you get it down and they'll spit it back out. Anyway. But who did all that for you? Your parents. Who provided or provides you with food, clothes, even some of the fancy clothes you like to wear sometimes? Who cooks your meals? Your parents. Who lets you use their car or maybe even get you one of your own? Your parents, a lot of times. And there's a little variation with what people choose to do and the decisions they make, and that's okay. The point I'm making is they took care of you. There will be a point in life where you will have some responsibility towards him. I mentioned my grandfather a few minutes ago. Do you know who goes and measures out his medicine for the week in pill boxes so he can get it right and not take something he shouldn't? It's children. They do that. Who goes and cleans up his apartment for him? It's children. See, there's a reversal. Now you are now on the beneficiary end of that. But Lord willing, if the time goes, time keeps going, and you live long enough, you'll be the one providing that care. And you will have a responsibility to do it. I believe the Bible firmly teaches that. Let's keep going. Now, we see some qualifications here for the widow indeed. And I want you to think of about a point here. That's the only group of people that I can read about in the Bible that the Bible lists and says these are to be taken care of on a continual basis, or these can be taken care of by the church on a regular basis if they meet these qualifications. I think that's an important principle to think about when it comes to what the church can do with respect to its funds. I think that's a real important principle. There are conditions laid out for this group of people. She has to be 60 years old. She has to have several others there listed. I'm standing up here and I can't remember now. So the point is, that's the only group I could read about that the church taking care of on a regular basis. And even then, some of them can't be taken care of if they're not meet those qualifications. Some of those widows can't. So keep that in mind as you study things like what the church can do with its money and what it can't, because I think that's a very important principle to remember. You know, can it take care of widowers? You know what a widower is, don't you? That's a man who's been widowed. Do we see anything about the church taking care of them? I don't. So keep that in mind as you study. If anyone does not provide for his own, verse 8, what is he worse than? An unbeliever. What's another word for that? Infidel. Infidel means an unbeliever. And again, in this context, it's talking about those who won't take care of their family, their parents, and their grandparents. And in that context, it's saying if they've got children or grandchildren who can take care of them, don't charge the church with that responsibility. The church is not to be charged. But the responsibility is on that of the children. Verse 4 tells us that, and verse 9 as well. Verse 9 says if she's to be put on the list only if she's not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man, having a reputation of good works, if she's brought up children, if she's shown hospitality to strangers, and so forth. But don't put younger ones on the list. Again, a list of individuals who are taken care of on a regular basis. It does not mean that the church can't help other needy saints on a temporary basis. We see evidence that that happened as well. I'm talking about a regular taking care of. Let's keep going here. We've talked about this. One who does not provide for his own is worse than an unbeliever. Don't ever forget that principle. Turn over to Mark, the 7th chapter. Off the top of your head, what's the 5th commandment of the 10 commandments? Honor your father and your mother. And we see that brought into the New Testament as well. So there's a responsibility, and Jesus is addressing it here with Pharisees. The way this started, the way this chapter starts, is that Jesus' disciples have come in contact with the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were known for a lot of traditions. They had ceremonial things that they did that they felt like needed to be done. Do you know that a lot of the traditions that they developed began out of sincere efforts to be very careful to abide by the Scriptures? But what happened was, in trying to be careful, they went so far that they made these things laws. We need to be careful that we don't do that today. And again, that's out of scope of what we're talking about here. But make sure that you don't let those kind of things, again, legitimate efforts to be careful, become laws that you try to apply to others. Because that's what they did here. And in this context, they observed that Jesus' disciples didn't wash their hands ceremonially before they ate. They thought if they had to go through this ritual hand washing that would keep them from being unclean before they ate. And they said, well, why don't your disciples why don't they observe the tradition of the elders? And Jesus comes back to them with this question. And he basically says, you know, Isaiah spoke well of you because you're honoring me with your lips, but your heart's far from me. Let's read now verses 9 through 13. Someone who hasn't read thus far, just raise your hand and I'll acknowledge you. Go ahead. So, he is rebuking them for their abuse of this passage. And that's really the context. But what I want you to learn from that is, well, let me ask you this. What does honor father and mother mean to you? When you hear that verse, what does that mean? Respect them. Okay, that's a good answer. What else? Obey them. That's another good answer. That's another good answer. Support them if they need financial help. I believe that this passage proves that. Because what is happening here is they were basically invalidating that command. And they were saying, well, whatever I was going to do to give to you, whatever I intended to give to you to help you financially, father, mother, I've devoted it to God. So I don't have anything left to give you. So they were invalidating that command. When that's a principle that applied to them, and I believe that principle applies to us as well. Do you see the point? There is a financial responsibility that we have. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I don't want to lose sight of that, okay? Don't let me focusing in on the financial aspect of that detract from the other part. What I'm trying to emphasize here, and probably should have emphasized more, is the, you know, we do have a responsibility to respect our parents. And I think we do need to recognize this. This was in a day and age in which they didn't have retirement systems like we have now. Many people today, when they retire and get older, they are financially, they have financial means that they don't necessarily need their children's help in that regard. I think we need to recognize that. But if they do need it, if they do require it, I think we need to have an attitude toward them that we are to take care of them. Because again, that principle is there in 1 Timothy 5. Let them take care of the ones that that raise them, is basically. Let them return what's already been done for them. So again, I believe that it includes that and can include that. But don't lose track of the other. Go ahead. I'm thinking about that not liking your parents thing. I hope my children like me. I, you know what? There are some parents that don't treat their children well enough that their children don't like them, and that's sad. But even then, there is a responsibility that you have, and I think that's your point. And that's excellent point. Let's keep going. We're just about done here. That could be true too. We live in a day and age where natural affection is disappearing in some places. Now, I think better of all of you, but we see evidence today that people have children that they don't care a thing about them. And that's terrible. And God will judge that. Yeah, they could. They could. And the children might not even be responsible. So that's a good point too. Again, regardless of how we are treated and regardless of certain some things, we still have responsibilities that we are to meet that God gives us. All right, let's wrap it up here and we'll take a break. Pure religion and undefiled before the Father is what? What two groups of individuals are mentioned in James 1:27? Honor widows and fathers. Those are among the most vulnerable, aren't they? And I believe, and I have read this, I believe this is using two classes of people to stand for anyone in need. This is just pulling out two, fatherless and widows. That doesn't mean, what I'm trying to get you to understand is, that doesn't mean that's the only two groups you have to help. Okay? But those are two of the most vulnerable. As individuals, we have responsibilities to visit the fatherless and widows. Think about that word visit for a second. What does that mean? What's visit mean? What'd you say? Go see them? That's what you said. Go see them. All right, that's a good way to do it. Go see them. Okay. Go help them out. Interact with them. Exactly. It implies a personal contact. And it does involve, it can involve supplying their needs. Absolutely it can. It's seeing to the needs of others who are needing our help. So what can we do now? Let me ask you this question. Name me some things you think you could be able to do in your position that would be a benefit to an older person. What are they? Mow their grass. Okay, that's good. Make them a meal. Excellent. Pick up the trash. Excellent. Okay. Boy, y'all thinking of all the things that I thought of. Those are the kind of things I think they do need help in. And those are things you can provide a very beneficial service to them. And they may have the means to do this with other people, but just going and spending the contact with them. That you just wouldn't believe what kind of encouragement they get out of that, particularly from people of your age. Because you are young, and you remind them of a time when they were young, and they didn't have all these aches and pains. They didn't have all those. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. I wouldn't suggest trying to go hula hoop with them, okay? I wouldn't suggest that. But there are plenty of things that you could do. Hannah? Do you know my grandfather I mentioned a minute ago? Do you know what he likes to play? Rook. He loves to play Rook. And he's very good at it. You would be amazed at some just simple things like that. How much joy you can bring to an older person. Remember, one of these days, Lord willing, the roles will be reversed. Let's think about a couple more things here and we'll take a break. So what can we do now? Plan your life such that you'll be able to take care of your parents when they're old if you need to. You'll have a spiritual responsibility to do that just as they are doing. When you plan a career, you need to take that in mind. You need to keep that in mind. You may have a responsibility to help take care of your parents one day. You may need to position yourself to live close enough to them that you can do that. Or you may need to have the financial means to do it. Think about that as you plan your lives. And you're in the planning stages right now. Think about that. Will I be able to do that? And just as I just said, treat elderly people like you want to be treated one day. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You can start employing that principle now. And maybe one day when you're old and sitting alone, and you'll have people come visit you. Any questions? I really appreciated your comments and interaction. I thought it was excellent. And you're a great encouragement to me just being here. I really appreciate your coming. And I think we'll have some announcements here.